is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. This March, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $2,000 off the Dr. Dish All-Star, Rebel, and CT Plus. And don't forget their Anything Is Possible giveaway, too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details.
Hey, this is Tyler Costin with Savvy Performance, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on actually a little bit early for us. So it's still Tuesday night after a non-garbage win by the Cavs, although they did beat the Charlotte Hornets again for the second time. But at least they got off to a good start, punished the Hornets for all their turnovers.
And getting us ready for tomorrow night.
Took care of business, and now you got Philly tomorrow night, so we'll see what happens.
Donovan Mitchell out tonight, too, with the finger injury load management. I mean, it makes sense not to play him tonight. They should win without him, and they did. So, is it, Mike, really quickly, I know we don't touch, we'll talk Cavs, but is it weird to you that it seems like the Cavs play better when only one of them plays?
I guess a little bit. I mean, it's hard to say because obviously their ceiling is higher when you have both of those guys out on the floor. But in some ways, they are at least a little bit redundant just because of their size and their similar skill sets. But I still think you need both of them, obviously, for the Cavs to be at their best. But there is sort of a more definitive role for each one of them. You know who the ball is going to be, who's going to have the ball in their hands in crunch time when one or the other is out of the game. So in that way, it kind of clarifies roles. But ultimately, if you're going to beat really good teams, obviously, you need both of those guys on the floor. So, look, against Charlotte, you got to take care of business regardless of who's out there on the floor. And it was good to see the last game on Sunday night against the Hornets was a little bit of a struggle, and it took them a long time to kind of get going. And eventually, they were able to win in the fourth quarter. Tonight, they kind of took control a little bit earlier, and Charlotte just kept tossing the ball all over the gym. So, good win for the Cavs tonight. We talked about last week that we thought they would probably split with the Heat and then win two in Charlotte. And so going 3-1, would have liked to see them get that other Miami game because they certainly had a shot at winning that one midway through the fourth quarter, but kind of slipped away from them. And now big game tomorrow night with Philly. So by the time people are listening to this, it'll be Wednesday. And so Wednesday night, big game, Cavs, Philly, should be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I know the magic number hasn't been clinched. You're pretty set that we're going to be in the top six, right? We're good.
I just don't see any way we fall out just because of, if for no other reason than if you look at the schedule. So right now, so Brooklyn lost tonight, so they are now four games behind the Cavs. And
the Knicks are currently losing.
And the Knicks are playing in Portland, and they are down by 5 at halftime. So certainly it's still a winnable game for the Knicks. But worst case scenario, the Cavs will still be up 3 on the Knicks, and best case scenario, they'd be up 4, which is kind of what we talked about last week too, that the Knicks had lost that home game to Charlotte before heading out on the West Coast trip, and now they've lost 2 out of 3. They did beat the Lakers on Sunday night, which was a big win, I think, for the Knicks, but still, they've lost 2 out of 3, and then you throw that Charlotte game in, they lost 3 out of their last 4, and so where it looked like they were at one point going to be able to creep within a half game of the Cavs, now they're probably going to be four games behind by the time the night's over. So I feel pretty confident that the Cavs are going to be able to hold on to the four seed. I don't know. I guess tomorrow night probably is a pretty key game if there's any chance of them getting to the three, because Philly's been playing really well. But the Cavs schedule at this point really opens up where you can look at it now realistically. And I don't know if we want to do the Cavs schedule right now, or are we just going to talk Cavs and then jump back into other stuff?
We can do this now. We can do this now. We'll do our win shares in a few minutes. That's fine.
All right, let's just do it now.
I kind of started this.
Yeah, all right. So here's what you have left. Let's just go through the entire schedule. I know we normally just go the week, but if we look at the entire schedule, you've got a home game tomorrow against Philadelphia. So Mitchell sits out tonight, obviously with the idea of you bring back a well-rested Donovan Mitchell. You're still coming off of back-to-back. Philly didn't play tonight. They didn't play since Sunday. So they're probably in town and hopefully are getting a good night's sleep, and they should be ready to play.
Hopefully James Harden's out partying, Mike.
Maybe. We'll see where he's at.
There's a good melt restaurant in Cleveland.
What type of establishments he likes to frequent. But nonetheless, we'll see what happens with that Philly game. Let's just pencil the Philly game in. Let's be pessimistic, and let's just pencil that in as a loss as we go through forward. So then you have home against Washington.
That's a win.
That's a win. Then you play two games back-to-back
at Brooklyn. By the way, we have 4 days off in between games here. We don't play again until Tuesday.
So you're going to Brooklyn. I think you probably – you'd like to say you're going to win both of those, but again, let's be pessimistic and say they lose one, so now you're 2-2. Then you're going to go home for Houston. You're going to win that. You're 3-2. At Atlanta, I always feel like we play poorly against Atlanta for some reason, but Atlanta, I don't know, Quinn Snyder, we can talk about that too, and what difference or non-difference Quinn Snyder has made in the Atlanta Hawks to this point. Let's pencil that in as a win. So now you're what, 4-2? At New York, let's go pessimistic. They lose that one. You're 4-3.
Then we're winning the rest.
Oh, sorry, that's home. Sorry, that's home. That's home against New York. So we're not going to lose at home against New York. So that makes us 5-3. Then you have Indiana, Orlando, Charlotte. So the last four. So 9-3. To finish it out, and I guess that's kind of on the pessimistic side. So if they go 9-3, there's no chance that they fall out. I think if you go 9-3, if you beat Philadelphia tomorrow night, I think there's a semi decent chance you could maybe get to the third seed.
Do you want to talk Philly? Do you want to do Philly schedule really quickly? Because we're not going to get the one or the two seed.
So let's say the Cavs. Let's just pencil it in at 9. What do we say? 9-3.
So we're gonna need the Philadelphia to go 6-6, and probably tomorrow night we need to win tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, we got to win tomorrow night. If we don't win tomorrow night's game, I don't think there's much hope of that happening. All right, so we look at Philly's schedule. Let me pull that up.
They play the Hornets on Friday night.
Okay, I think that's a win.
And then they play the Pacers on Saturday night on a back to back. That's probably still a win, right?
That's a win, yeah. So they're 2-0.
They play the Bulls at home on Monday. You're 3-0 if they were giving them our win, right?
We did the pessimistic version for the Cavs. So let's just do the pessimistic version for the Sixers.
Well, we can't be a pessimistic for this first game.
Yeah, we can.
Okay, so we're saying 3-1 then, right?
Three and one.
Because they're going to beat Chicago at home. Okay.
Yeah, 3-1.
Okay, so then.
Then they're going on a four-game road trip.
Then they go to Chicago again.
I'd say that's a win.
That's a win. So that's 4-1. Then on Friday they go to the Warriors at home. I'm going to give the Warriors the win.
That's a loss.
Okay, so what does that make them? What I've already lost.
4-2.
4-2. 4-2. All right. Then they go to the Suns. That's a loss.
Okay, 4-3.
Okay, they're off that day. Then they go to the Nuggets, which, the Nuggets are scaring me. But we're going to give it to Denver. James Harden in high altitudes, probably not good.
4-4.
4-4. Then they play
home Dallas and Toronto.
Home Dallas and Toronto. They probably split that, right?
Nah, they're going to win both of those games.
So 6-4.
Yep.
And what's left?
Milwaukee. At Milwaukee, that's a loss. That's 6-5. Home against Boston, let's call it a loss. 6-6.
Well, there we go.
Now, they got three more games after that still.
Okay.
Because they've played a lot less games than us. So
home against the Heat.
Home against the Heat, that's a win. At Atlanta, it's a win.
Well,
at
Brooklyn, I don't know. I don't know. James Harden in Atlanta.
Yeah,
if they move. Oh, no, they're back-to-back. Oh, wait. They don't play back-to-back, right?
Magic City?
They're going to go from the – they play at home, and then they have to fly to Atlanta. So they're not going to go out beforehand, unfortunately for us. And then they play at Brooklyn. I don't there's no way the Cavs pass them.
Yeah, I don't think we're catching them. I think we're pretty locked in. I think we're pretty locked into the four.
Has a gastrointestinal attack or something.
Yeah, I think we're locked into the four. I really think that we're locked into the four. And I go back and forth between, do I like the way we're playing? Do I not like the way we're playing? It feels like game in and game out. I'm not sure exactly what you're going to get. I texted you after that first Charlotte victory in this back-to-back that the Cavs are the king of the garbage win. But it's better than getting a garbage loss. So the fact that they've sort of taken care of business here with Charlotte, to me, was a good sign that even though they struggled in that first game, they were able to pull it out. And then you win this one tonight, kind of going away. Means right now you're sitting there, you've won five out of your last six, and you got Philly coming tomorrow. I think tomorrow's a game that is kind of important for the psyche of the Cavs. I know we beat Boston last week, but that was without three of Boston's best players. And we really haven't had what I would consider to be a really good win in, honestly, quite some time. So I think this is a big game. I think it's a game that's on national TV, on ESPN. I think the Cavs got to show up and play. Now, no Jared Allen obviously makes it a little bit more difficult to try to deal with Embiid. Not that Allen has ever really had much luck trying to corral Embiid, nor has anybody else this season. But I do think that a lack of Jared Allen is going to make it tough on the Cavs tomorrow night. They're going to have to do a decent job on the rest of that team in order to be able to withstand. I think Embiid's probably going to put up 35-plus, I would guess.
Yeah. There's no one going to be able to guard him. So, all right, Mike. We're going to go back to the win shares. We're 10 minutes into the podcast, and we're going to go back to the win shares because
I went off
the reservation a little bit there. Apologize.
It's all right. Hey, we got some Cavs talk early.
Well, can you guess what team we're going to pick their win shares for?
The Charlotte Hornets?
Oh, yeah. Here we go. The Charlotte Hornets. Now, this does count for both incarnations of the Hornets and their time as the Charlotte Bobcats.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go Alonzo Mourning.
Alonzo Mourning is number 12.
12? Oh, my gosh. Larry Johnson.
Number 4.
Kemba Walker.
Number 1.
All right, so I have three guys that have been on the list. Now I need some more Charlotte Hornets. Man, things start to go bad quickly here. Del Curry.
Number 5.
All right, so I've got 1, 4, and 5. So I need 2 and 3. Who else is a part of that Charlotte Hornets, Larry Johnson, Del Curry era that I'm forgetting about? Alonzo's 12. I guess he wasn't with the Hornets long enough because he went to Miami. Well, let's see. Man, it gets tough. Rex Chapman.
He's not on the list at all.
Okay.
I knew this one was going to be a hard one, Mike.
I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel here for thinking about even who.
This guy sounds like a mobster.
Sounds like a mobster. So, Kelly Trepuka?
No, short guy.
Short guy.
Bald. Facial expressions.
I don't know. All right. Yeah, I got nothing there. Let me think.
These guys all played in my lifetime, by the way. Like, I mean, I know it's 88, 89, I know, but like, I will tell you that
Bobby Phils?
Bobby Phils is not on the list at all.
No. Okay. Man.
The other guy in the top five, so I tried to give you a hint of the one. The other guy in the top five, someone when LeBron was in his first iteration as a Cav, someone said this guy, there was a big hullabaloo on this on sports media talking about this. Some guy said gave him an MVP vote over LeBron.
Man.
And he's not, I mean, he's not even a Hall of Famer guy.
No, okay. I got nothing.
Okay,
then.
I'm gonna start from the bottom.
We don't really need any more dead air of me scrambling
number
around.
11, to... Number 11 is Emeka Okafor.
Okay.
Number 10 is David Wesley.
All right.
Number 9 is Marvin Williams.
Okay.
The next two guys are two guys I'm disappointed you didn't get.
Okay.
Number 8, Glenn Rice.
See, I associate Glenn Rice with the Heat.
Number 7, Anthony Mason.
Yeah, I mean, I think of him as a Knick, obviously.
Number 6, Cody Zeller.
Oh, my gosh.
Number 3, the guy I was trying to get you to get with a mobster name, short facial expressions, bald guy, Muggsy Bogues, baby.
Muggsy, all right.
And number 2, Gerald Wallace.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have even come close to any of those.
You wouldn't even guess them. I couldn't believe you didn't get Muggsy.
No, I think of Muggsy as a Washington Bullet. I know he was on the Hornets for a while, but I think of him standing next to Manute.
Oh, by the way, did you see that pass Bol Bol made tonight?
Pass who made?
Bol Bol, Manute's son.
No.
Made a great behind-the-back, in-transition pass across the court and hit a guy and made a 3.
I love Bol Bol. I don't know what he is. I don't know where he's going to ultimately find his spot, and I don't know if he's going to be able to stay healthy, but that guy is something. I don't know what he is, but man, I wish he was on our team because he's something, and he's so fun to watch. His highlights are as good as anybody's highlights in the league.
They're fun to watch. He's definitely fun to watch, Mike. He's definitely fun to watch.
Most improved player?
No.
No?
No.
Who you got?
I don't know. Not in Bol Bol.
Former Cavalier?
Sexton? Or Markkanen has to win it. Right?
I think it's going
to
be I think it's probably got to be Markkanen. I mean, I guess Shea maybe jumping up from a guy who scored 22 a game to a guy who's scoring 30 plus, going from a guy who maybe people thought could be second or third best player. It's got to be Markkanen. Markkanen went from a jump of a guy who nobody thought he was ever going to be much more, I think, than a journeyman coming out of last year. And now he was an all-star starter this year and was the best player on what could end up being a playoff team. And nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, here's what I'm going to say too, Mike. I think when you look at it, I would say Laurie has to get the nod, in my opinion, just because SGA's missed so many games. I don't know how many games he's missed at this point. But if I was to give it strictly to... But I guess you could make the argument that when he's been out there, they've played better. I don't know. I kind of go back and forth on that. I don't know how many games SGA's missed so far this year, but I'm pretty sure Markkanen's played almost all, if not all. Like, I don't remember Markkanen getting hurt at all this year, right?
I don't think he's been out. So let's look it up. I'm looking up Shea's.
I'll look right up Laurie.
Shea's played 57 games, and the Thunder have played, what's their record? The Thunder have played 69. So he's missed 16.
That's a good chunk, right?
It's not horrible, but it's still a pretty decent chunk. Probably not enough to exclude him from consideration, at least not yet until the new rules kick in. But
where I looked did not tell
here,
me.
I'll find it.
You're on the right website. I was on the wrong one.
I'll find it. I need to get to the Utah Jazz and stats.
Oh, he's played 62 games.
Markkanen's played 62, and the Jazz have played 68. So he's played the majority of their games. 69, sorry. They played 69. So he's played the majority of their games.
Yeah.
I think Markkanen wins it just because of the story of a guy who, again, most people thought he was a journeyman at this point in his career, and he certainly has proven to be more than that this year on the Jazz. So kudos to him. Yeah, I think probably Markkanen wins that, but we'll see.
Yep. All right. So I guess, Mike, here's my question to you. Is it more likely that we see Zion this the rest of the season, or more likely we see Ja the rest of the season? These two are forever going to be entwined.
I don't think you're seeing either one of them. In all honesty, I think you're probably more likely to see Zion at this point. I don't think you're going to see either one of them, though. I'd put the odds at seeing Ja at like maybe 15%, because maybe he comes back. Do they bring him back if he misses the rest of the regular season? Do they bring him back for the playoffs, or are we just throwing this year away if you're the Memphis Grizzlies? Seems hard to believe that they would throw it. They would just throw the season away. But at the same time, I mean, I know they haven't said, right, what the treatment exactly is that he's going through or going under.
Well, he went to Florida for therapy or something. Right.
So I thought he was in Orlando. It said he checked into a, you know, a treatment center for
Disney,
whatever. Yeah, I don't know. But look, it's clearly gone beyond sort of the initial, hey, this guy, what's he doing? It seems like there's maybe something deeper here. And so I don't think you're going to see him. And yet at the same time, Memphis has the potential of playing a couple rounds in the playoffs. So maybe he sits out the regular season at some point. They bring him back and he plays in the playoffs. I don't know. I don't know if that's what they're going to do, what they're not going to do. Zion, it clearly looks like the Pelicans, who lost to the Lakers tonight, are on their way out of any type of serious playoff contention, which is so disappointing when you go back to where they were on, I don't know, whatever, December 15th. They were in, I think, second place in the West. They were like 23-15. And since then, they've completely collapsed. And what's, I think, probably the most disappointing, I mean, obviously, if you're a Pelicans fan, you're just completely distraught by the fact that Zion just, he can't stay healthy. And he's not on the floor. And that just completely crushes your team's chances of being any type of legitimate contender. And yet, you look back to last season and what they were able to do and pushing Phoenix in the first round, although clearly Phoenix was a flawed team, as we found out in the next round against Dallas. But nonetheless, that team has some quality players and some guys that can do things. And it seems just, in some small way, it seems almost incomprehensible the way they've completely fallen off a cliff. And I know Ingram was out for a while, but he's been back. And Trey Murphy had 41 the other night. And you got Valanciunas, you got CJ McCollum, who hasn't had a great year, but he's still a good player. You got Herb Jones. They just have a lot of guys. Alvarado, Larry Nance has been out a little bit, but he's back. It just feels like I don't know what they are. It's just disappointing, because if you're a Pelicans fan, it looked like you had things going completely in the right direction. And I think you're at a point now with Zion, and you and I have obviously had this discussion a bunch of times, and we're kind of on opposite sides of the fence when it comes to whether or not we think he's going to ever have a meaningful career. But it just feels like this team was better positioned with him, without him last year. And it felt like they were kind of building something. And granted, he's the key to everything that they do eventually in terms of being a real contender in the playoffs and trying to get to an NBA title. They're not doing that without him. But it felt like these other guys maybe had a little bit more to give than what they've shown over the last 3 months of the season without him. That's I think, if you're the Pelicans franchise, you have to be a little bit disappointed that you haven't held up a little bit better without Zion.
Yeah. I just don't know. I think there's a chance Ja comes back. The presser today, they kind of said, we don't know if he's going to be back on Friday or not. We don't know when he's going to be back. I don't know how they got the, I don't know if, did you see the other stuff that came out about his night at the club that he was at?
No, just tell me because I haven't seen it.
Well, I don't. There's lots of strippers and doing things that were very, very inappropriate going on. And I don't know how they got the film and the video, Mike. I think there's some leaks going on, which is not probably good for Ja. That came out like two. I think that's why he went to therapy. I think they were kind of waiting to let everything tide over after the law had kind of supposedly cleared him, which I still don't understand how that's possible. But and then more stuff came out, and that's when they announced that he was going to Florida. So I think there's a chance that he comes back before the regular season's over. But if he doesn't come back for the regular season, I don't see how you can inject him into the playoff roster. I don't think that would be a good look, in my opinion. Right?
I don't think so. I mean, and I don't think it would be the hard part of this is, right, is we don't know where Ja's mindset is on this. Is this something where he's recognized that, like, that was rock bottom, you know what I mean? Where he hit that point and that incident takes place. And he realizes, oh my God, man, I got to make a change and I can't continue to go on this way. Or is this something where it's sort of being forced upon him by the team and the NBA, and these are things that he has to do in order to be able to earn his way back to the team? I don't know where this falls on that spectrum. And look, when that first happened, I mean, clearly people were upset. And it was a bad look, but I don't think anybody anticipated that it would lead to what it's led to. And as you said before, you have this connection forever between Zion and Ja. And you go back 6 months ago, and Ja was the toast of the NBA. I mean, kids loved him. He's got his signature shoe coming out with Nike. He was a guy who is so fun to watch on the floor because of his athleticism and his unselfishness and his passing and just all the things that we've talked about over the last couple of years with him. A great leader, guy that seemingly his teammates love to play with. And then on the other side of it, you had Zion, who you're one of the people that feels like he's never going to be able to play any type of meaningful stretches of games in his career, right? I mean, you're saying he's not going to get to 250 games, which it's entirely possible. I mean, I think he's going to, but it's entirely possible that he doesn't. And so 6 months ago, if you were a Memphis Grizzlies fan, you were kind of like, hey, like, we got the better guy. And you and I have argued this many times about which guy would you rather have. And I still think that Zion's ceiling is higher, but 6 months ago, most rational, insane people would have said you would definitely take Morant because of what his career has been and what potentially it could be, and he hasn't been injured. And now you've got all this stuff that, who knows? I mean, who knows where this kind of thing goes? And when you're out all the time, look, these guys are unbelievable athletes, and there's many guys in the history of the league, and you think about Jordan and sort of his reputation of not sleeping and being out and gambling and playing 36 holes of golf and
with
all
Charles
the things
Barkley
that he did
the day before the playoff game.
Right. So you have all these examples of guys who can kind of do that. And again, if you're at 23 or 24, you're far more capable of doing it than when you get older and later into your career. But nonetheless, that stuff, there's a reason why LeBron's still playing at his age, because LeBron was taking care of his body from a very early age. And if you don't, you're risking something. And so it's just interesting to see how the narrative has gone back and forth between would you rather have Zion, would you rather have Ja? And there was a lot of caveats with Zion that didn't exist with Ja. And now suddenly there's a lot of caveats to Ja's career. And that's not to say that if you thought Ja before that you're suddenly flipping over to Zion, because things don't look much better on that side from at least the standpoint of getting on the floor. I don't know what to make of these two guys. And I still think that the best version of Zion, as I've said many times, is historically great. But I don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to get to see that for an extended stretch of his career. There's no precedent for it. He's been injured everywhere he's been. And so I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. And I hope obviously Ja gets things straightened out and that he's on board with whatever kind of treatment he's getting so that when he comes back, he's ready to be at his best, both as a human being and as a basketball player.
I agree. I concur. I just hope he's on the right path, Mike.
For sure.
And I hope they don't rush. He doesn't rush back. That's the other thing.
Zion's not going to come back, though, right? He's not playing this regular season.
No.
Yeah, I know.
You and I,
you got a whole other offseason, man.
You and I have a better chance in of playing.
A whole other offseason of him coming off an injury. It's crazy if you're the Pelicans.
250, baby. I'm telling you, I'm buying it. I'm buying it. I'm selling it. I'm not thinking he's making it.
All right. It's fair.
Just not reliable.
It's fair.
All right. So I guess where we go here now, Mike, is you brought this to my attention. The NBA odds. Is that where we want to go? Do you want to go there?
Sure, let's talk that. Okay, yeah,
so,
sure.
So the Ringer has this NBA odds machine. And I don't exactly know how they do it, Mike. I honestly didn't even know it existed until you told me. But we're going to go with it just because.
Okay, here we go. Well, here, you can read it right here. The calculations are based on team strength as measured by point differential, a historically strong predictor of future success, with adjustments for individual wrinkles like injuries and schedules.
All right, there you go. So, listening out there, guys, this makes me a little bit excited, but also let's not get our hopes up too high. We've spent some time talking about these teams, but the number one team according to the Ringer is the Boston Celtics, who have a 17% chance to win the title, and barely in second place are your Cleveland Cavaliers with a 16% title odd chance. Now, the Ringer is projecting us to be worse than what we projected us to do. Because I said we would win. We said they would win how many? Nine.
Said 9-3. The Ringer has us at 8-4, which, yeah.
I mean, so that has us at 51-31, and they have Philadelphia at 54-28. But Philly's only got a 10% chance, probably because they look at James Harden and see he's not going to win a title.
That's about what Philly's record is about. What we said, I think we had them.
Yeah.
I think we had them 6-6, and then winning the last three, which put them at 9-6, which is exactly what the Ringer has.
What's really interesting to me in this whole situation, Mike, is like they have Milwaukee at 10%. Like, I don't understand. I just don't see how Milwaukee, who in my opinion, they're the team to beat in the East, right? I know people want to. To me,
I think there's no question. To me, they're clearly the best team.
I mean, they're going to be 57-25. Giannis has played. He's missed stints this year, and they've still managed to stay afloat. Sure, they're not going to get the 60 wins, but like, I just don't understand. Like, so just hypothetically, we're the 4 seed, which is what we predicted. Okay, we're going to have to play Milwaukee in the second round. Now, I know we've beaten them. We went 2-2 against them, right? Or did we go 3-1 against them? 2-2, right?
I think 2-2.
Okay. Sure, we went 2-2 against them, but like, I can't, like, I love my Cavaliers, Mike. I love them. I can't see them beating Giannis in a 7-game series.
No, we're not beating a healthy Milwaukee Bucks team. Now, if a guy's hurt, look, I think what we see from this, from the odds machine is the fact that it's based a lot on point differential, and the Cavs, as of tonight, have the best point differential in the league. Boston's number 2. And then you've got to go down to, I think, then the Bucks and the Grizzlies are the next 2 teams. So really, that's kind of how it folds. You know, Philly's a little bit higher than Milwaukee for whatever reason. But I think last year, I know that the odds machine favored the Celtics. Like, the Celtics were kind of this, we're sort of almost in the same position as the Cavs, where if you remember back in whatever January, Boston was 500, and then slowly they started to win more and win more and win more, and their point differential kept going up. And the projection systems all said that Boston had a really good chance to win the NBA title, far better than what their record was showing at the time as they were creeping up the standings. And so I think the Cavs are kind of in that same boat. Now, that doesn't mean I agree with you 100% that I don't see any way that the Cavs are the second most likely team to win the NBA Finals. That just doesn't seem feasible. It doesn't seem possible. You're talking about if you're the Cavs and you stay at the four seed, you're going to have to beat a good team in the first round, whether that be the Knicks. I guess if you somehow play Brooklyn, if Brooklyn somehow holds off the Knicks, I'm not sure how good Brooklyn is, but whatever. Those series aren't going to be easy for a Cavs team that has no playoff experience. And then you're talking about you're going to have to beat Milwaukee and then the winner of Boston and Philadelphia. That's a pretty tall order for a Cavs team that's never been through any type of playoff run together. And the only guy with any real meaningful playoff experience that they have who's going to play real minutes is Mitchell. And so I just don't see that being realistic. I don't know if you have a different thought.
No, I don't have a different thought, Mike. I just don't. I don't see it.
Milwaukee's the best team. If Middleton would seemingly, he's becoming and looking more and more like Middleton each time he goes out there. Giannis, as you said, has had some minor injuries and has sat out multiple games over the last couple weeks. But what do you have? I think 42 or 46 last night against Sacramento. And I think when you talk about Holiday, Middleton, Lopez, and Giannis, most teams are going to have a difficult time matching up with that group. And nobody has a good matchup for Giannis. And I just see if they're healthy, to me, I think Milwaukee to me is a prohibitive favorite to win the title if all their guys stay healthy. I think their best is better than anybody else's best. And to be honest, I don't really even think it's that close. I think if they're at their best and they're healthy, I think they win. I don't want to say easily, but I think they're the best team.
100%.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
I guess here we go. Let's start talking about the MVP stuff too.
All right.
I mean, Jokic is statistically playing out of his mind. Okay. I get it. But can we really say that he's better than Giannis, Mike? Who are you afraid of more? Are you afraid of Jokic more or are you afraid of Giannis more?
You're afraid of Giannis more.
This is the same situation that LeBron was in all those years, right?
Well, you shouldn't have the voter fatigue. I think the thing is that when you look at what Jokic is, what he does, that we have so much more on the analytics side. And if you look at any of the advanced numbers when it comes to Jokic, those numbers for him are just completely off the charts. He has the best on-off where he's on the court. I think the Nuggets are like plus 13 or something. And when he's off the floor, they're minus 6 or 7. So it's like a 20-point difference when he's on the floor versus when he's off the floor. And because he's such a good passer and because he does so many different things well, he's kind of an offensive system unto himself. And his shooting percentages are ridiculous. And he can get his shot in all different places in all different ways. And so they're completely different players. Jokic, obviously, from a physical standpoint, when you look at him, he doesn't look like the prototypical NBA athlete, to say the least. Whereas Giannis is – cut from a mold that if you could just design a basketball player and design their body, you'd come up with Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I'm more afraid of Giannis in a playoff series. I would be afraid of Jokic too. Don't get me wrong. That list of guys that I'd be afraid of, I wouldn't go very far down that list before I came to Jokic. And he's played really well in the playoffs. I know you and I have talked about this in the past during playoff runs where Jokic has been unbelievable and scored just almost borderline unstoppable. And he just hasn't, for whatever reason, his teammates haven't been up to the task to be able to get him where they want to go. And obviously last year, Murray's hurt and Porter Jr.'s hurt. So kind of throw that away. But Jokic has produced in the playoffs. He hasn't produced on the same level as Giannis, who put up a 50-point game in a deciding NBA Finals game. So, yeah, I'm more afraid of Giannis. And I think when you look at the MVP, there's a lot of buzz out there for Embiid too. And I think over this last four-game split, I'm guessing that a lot of voters who maybe had Jokic are starting to rethink and maybe start to look a little bit closer at the case that Giannis and Embiid have. So,
yeah, I think, listen, and I don't really think we want to talk too much about what some of the people were saying about the race stuff. Like,
let me ask you this. Do you think, and look, we can say what we want to say, and obviously we're two white males, and so our perspective may be different from somebody else's, but I find it pretty hard to believe that in the case of Jokic, or going back to Dirk Nowitzki or Steve Nash or Larry Bird, that there was some type of bias. I just don't buy that in terms of the people who are voting for those awards. To me, that doesn't seem like a cross-section of people that would be racially biased. I just don't see that being the case.
I agree, Mike. I mean, I just don't see it. And here's the thing. Here's the thing you can say. Like no one was saying this when Steve Nash won two MVPs in a row, right? Like, this is all.
There are people who said he shouldn't have won, but
I agree. But that wasn't a race thing.
No, it was not a race thing.
I think this is my personal opinion. That I think sometimes we're hypersensitive to stuff now. And as soon as we think that there's something wrong, we're going to automatically assume it's a race-related issue. Now, maybe I'm wrong. And like I said, like you said, we're two white males. But I think that everything is now projected on things because of race. I think race is a huge thing right now. It's all, I guess it's not just race, it's race and politics and all this stuff. I really think that everything, you know, we could all look at different things and say it's because of the race or it's because of this. And while there may be some underlying biases that's there, I just can't imagine when you look at it. Like, I didn't look, Mike, and maybe you can tell me this, or maybe you don't know, and if you don't know and you want to add to this, like, how close was the MVP voting the last 2 years? Did Jokic run away with it, or was it close? I don't know.
I think Jokic won it fairly handily. I mean, I don't think they were some of the closest votes in NBA history. I think it was pretty clean cut.
I'm pulling it up right now. Full voting, okay. Voting results. Add your piece and I'll see if I can find it, Mike.
Well, I think when you're talking about who you vote for, I just don't see, and maybe I'm naive, but I don't see race factoring into who somebody's voting for in the MVP race. Now, to say that it's never happened or that somebody hasn't taken race into account, I think would probably be disingenuous, but I don't think it's skewed the vote to the point where guys who were not deserving of the MVP were winning the MVP.
Okay, and so Giannis won. He got 65 first place votes. Embiid got 26, and Giannis got 9.
Yeah, so that's a pretty decisive win.
Yeah. Let me see. The year before that. Yeah, Jokic got 91 first place votes. Oh my god. Okay. 2 years ago, Giannis got 90, or Jokic got 91, Embiid got 1, Curry got 5, Antetokounmpo got 1, Chris Paul got 2, and I want you to take a guess as the other player in 2020-2021 that got a MVP vote.
Russell Westbrook.
He's a former MVP. Played when he won the former MVP, he was a member of the Chicago Bulls.
Derrick Rose.
He got a vote.
Nice. Nice.
Anyways.
I kind of remember that. So, look, this year's MVP. So, I think one of the things that another advantage that Jokic has, and it's not a huge advantage, but Jokic has played 60 games. Embiid's played 54. Giannis played 53. So, Embiid and Giannis have been nicked up or sat out more than Jokic has. And ultimately, value, if you play more games, you're more valuable to your team. So I think that's a factor.
Here's a question. Is all this controversy going to cause people to not vote for Jokic?
No, I think where you're at with Jokic right now is, I mean, clearly, if you go back a month, whatever the Bontemps straw poll where Jokic had 77 out of whatever number of votes. I mean, he basically had almost everybody's vote. Jokic was clearly running away with the MVP. And that was after the head-to-head with Embiid, where Embiid kind of took it to him and clearly had a better game as the Sixers beat the Nuggets back, whatever, a month ago. But then, since then, Giannis has continued to play well. Embiid had the game winner the other night against Portland after Philly came back. And he's had some other really huge scoring games. So I think both Giannis and Embiid have closed the gap on Jokic. I think this four-game losing streak clearly is not helping Jokic. And the reality is we still have, whatever, 15 games left in the season. Most teams have between 15 and 20 games left. So when you start talking about that, you're looking at there's still a significant portion of the season that's left. And I think if you look at the schedule, so, and I can't remember, I think I read this somewhere, and this is why I'm pulling this up, but the Denver Nuggets play back-to-back against the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers at home. And those games are on March 25th and March 27th. And I think that those games...
So you're saying those are pretty important games, Mike?
I'm saying those games will go a long way, I think, towards determining who ends up getting the MVP. So let's say that Denver sweeps those two games at home against those two teams and Jokic puts up a triple-double in each game. I think things would look pretty good for him at that point. Let's say Philly and Milwaukee both come into Denver and win, and each of those guys has a big game, and Jokic just plays average, and the Nuggets lose both of those. I think at that point, you'd probably lean towards Giannis or Embiid winning the MVP. The Bucks are going to end up with the best record, barring something unforeseen here at the end of the season, and the statistics that Giannis is putting up, if I had to vote right now, I think I'd vote Giannis.
I think if I voted right now, I'd also vote Giannis.
Your point, I think, is the best one, which is who's the best player? Who's the guy you're most afraid of in a playoff series? And the guy that I would least like to see pulling up to my arena as my opponent is Giannis. I just know that guy's going to keep coming. He's going to keep coming at me. He's going to keep coming at me. He's going to keep coming at me. Not that the other two won't. Embiid has a history of being less than stellar, being less than healthy in the playoffs. And Jokic, I think, has been really good, as I said earlier, in the playoffs. But just I don't think you feel him in the same way you feel Giannis in a playoff series.
I fear, I'll be honest with you, Mike, I think I might fear Embiid more in a playoff series than I do Jokic. I don't know how you feel about that.
It's they're different, right? I mean, I think they're different. Jokic, because of his passing, is relying upon his teammates to play well. I think he's less likely to get 50 in a playoff game than Embiid or Giannis. And so traditionally, we love our NBA superstars or NBA MVPs to be guys that can go out and in a big game, they can do what Giannis did and get 50 to clinch it and just say, hey, I'm putting this team on my back. Now, I think Giannis and Embiid can do that. I also think that Jokic can probably do it to some degree, but I think Jokic is just a different type of player. He wants to get guys involved and he needs his teammates to be able to hit the shots that he's creating for them. And they're all different players in their own way. And I guess it's a matter of what do you prefer stylistically? What does it look like in the regular season versus the playoffs? And what I will say of these three guys, and this is a regular season award, so really the playoffs shouldn't matter. And I guess I prefer Giannis and Jokic. Embiid's my least favorite of these three guys. Not that I have anything against Embiid, but I just enjoy watching Giannis and Jokic more than
he's better than Ben Simmons.
Nah, that does. I'm well past that. And again, congratulations to you for making that decision 3 or 4 years ago when I was still on the Ben Simmons train. But to me, it's Giannis, the best player on the best team. The precedent over the history of the league is if you have the best player on the best team who's having a career season, which I don't know if it's necessarily a career season, but certainly it's a great, great season by any standard for Giannis. There's a precedent for that guy winning. And so I won't be surprised if Giannis ends up getting it, especially if he closes out the season strong. I think last time I looked tonight, he was on his way to a triple-double or close to it, and there's still like 9 minutes to go in the game tonight with Phoenix. So he's got 33-10-8 right now in 29 minutes against Phoenix. They're up by one with about 7 minutes to go. So if I was betting, I'd bet Giannis.
All right. You see the NBA's poll came out about or the NBA ladder for the defensive player of the year?
No.
Mobley is third.
Look, we get to watch Mobley a lot, and I know there are a lot of people out there maybe that are listening to the pod that don't get to see him nearly as much as we do, but he just has incredible timing as a shot blocker. He's so long. And he can guard anybody. I mean, he guards little guys. I almost feel like the one type of guy that he still hasn't quite figured out is sort of the brutish guy who can put the ball on the floor and kind of bully him, which is basically Giannis and maybe a couple other guys that sometimes give him trouble where they kind of barrel into him, put their shoulder into his chest, and they're able to kind of knock him out of position. But he just covers so much ground, and he can guard all different types of players, and his shot blocking is incredible. And when he blocks it, sort of like the old Bill Russell thing, he keeps it in bounds. He's not swatting things into the 14th row. He usually keeps it in play, and he's an incredible defender. He's going to be the defensive player of the year at some point. He's going to win, I would guess, multiple defensive player of the years at some point in his career.
So they have him behind Brooke Lopez at number one, Mike. And then number two, Jaren Jackson Jr.
So the Brook Lopez thing I think is interesting, right? Because Lopez clearly is an important part of what Milwaukee does on defense. He's so big. He's got excellent timing as a shot blocker. He can clog up the lane. But when I think of the best defensive player, I think of a guy that can just kind of wreak havoc everywhere. So I think of more like a Mobley or a Jaren Jackson or a Giannis who are guarding multiple positions and are all over the floor and are here and there and everywhere. Whereas Lopez kind of does what he does, sort of like the old Gobert thing, right? Gobert does what he does and protects the rim and walls off the paint. But I feel like I want a guy that can do multiple things, can not only wall off the paint, but can go out and switch, because those guys just are more valuable in playoff basketball. Brook Lopez, there's certain matchups and certain teams and certain players that he just is not a good fit. He can't be out there on the floor. Same thing, you think about what has always been the criticism of Rudy Gobert versus you have Giannis or Jaren Jackson or Mobley, and it doesn't matter. They can put them on anybody. They can be anywhere you want them to be. They're never gonna get played off the floor. To me, that's what I would want by defensive player of the year.
I agree. I mean, I'm just excited that he's gonna get more than likely get what you call it, first team all NBA, right? He's gotta get first team all NBA, right?
You mean first team all defense?
Yeah, all right, that's what I meant. First team all
defense. Yeah, I think there's gotta be a decent shot that happens. I'd say put the odds at better than 50-50 that happens.
Good. That's awesome. I'm glad. All right. Do we want to talk about the play-in tournament in the West, the current situation?
Sure, let's talk about it quick. Yep.
Yeah, then we can wrap there. The Western playoff picture is a hot mess, as we've talked about every single week. The Lakers have won tonight and didn't gain any ground. They were all the way up to 7 at one point. They are one game behind the 7 spot. They are 2 games behind the 6 spot. Actually, 2 games behind the 5 spot. And they're 3.5 games behind the 4 spot. And they're actually going to be 3 games out if Milwaukee holds on, right? Yeah, they're going to be 3 games out in the 4 spot.
Yes.
That's crazy,
yes.
Right?
It is. I think you just look at all these teams down here at the bottom, and Portland, by the way, is falling apart against the Knicks. So they look like they're gonna lose.
They didn't fall apart, Mike. A train ran them over. They're down 16 now.
Yeah, they look like they're gonna be finished and probably out of. I think last week I said I thought Portland would make it. So that's not looking too good.
I think I questioned you on that too, Mike. I don't remember.
You probably did. But the thing with one of the reasons why I felt like that was because it feels like Portland wanted to win. Like, I'm not sure Utah as an organization wants to win. I'm not sure Oklahoma City as an organization wants to win. New Orleans, at this point, do they want to win? I don't know. I guess they have the pick swap with the Lakers, which they thought was going to be, or is it an outright, do they outright have their pick? I think it's a pick swap this year.
Pick swap, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a swap. So that swap now looks like it may not even come into play, that the Lakers may finish ahead of the Pelicans, which go back to December and tell somebody that, and they would have looked at you like you were crazy. So
you have a eye on your forehead or something?
Yeah, exactly. Utah clearly wants to lose. Dallas wants to win. The Lakers want to win. The Timberwolves want to win. Look, I don't know. At this point, I think Portland's far enough behind that you can feel fairly confident that maybe they're not going to make it. But again, they're only 2.5 games out. New Orleans, I don't really feel too good about what they're doing or what they've done. Utah wants to lose. So maybe the teams that we have now, is Oklahoma City going to stay in there?
I mean, the question is who jumps them if not, right?
Right. That's what I mean. Like it.
We know for a fact Houston and San Antonio are not doing it.
See, that's why I picked Portland, because I feel like Portland wants to win. I feel like Portland and Dame want to win games.
Well, they're not going to win this one. They're going to be 3 games out.
I know. And I'm sure it doesn't feel like New Orleans wants to win. It doesn't feel like Utah wants to win. It doesn't feel like Oklahoma City really wants to win.
So what you're saying is the Lakers are going to be in the play-in tournament no matter what.
I mean, I wouldn't say no matter what, because Anthony Davis could go down tomorrow and they might not win another game. So I don't want to say no matter what, but the Lakers want to win, which gives them a leg up on a couple of these other teams. None of these teams are good. I mean, I think that's the bottom line, right, is that none of these teams are any good. Golden State, are they good?
No.
You're still buying?
I mean, once again, would I be surprised No, I'm not going to be surprised, because I'm going to stick with this line and hoping that it damns them and they can't do it, Mike. Because
I do not want to see another Golden State NBA Finals. I'm done with that. I'm good. I don't need to see the Warriors in the finals again.
Oh, I don't need to see it either. But I'm not going to say that it's not going to happen, because then you know what's going to happen, because we said it last year, and then I picked them last year in the turn in the. Because just because I was trying to reverse jinx them and it didn't work, so I'm going to reverse jinx them again, saying I'm not surprised if they lose or if they're in this situation.
Do you feel like it's even more muddled today than it was a week ago? Like the whole Western Conference, like this Denver 4-game losing streak has got me shook up. Like I picked Denver Milwaukee at the beginning of the season; that's where I'm sticking with. But
Mike, I'm going to tell you something. I feel good about one of those teams. I don't feel good about the other one for you. Denver is just giving me bad juju vibes right now. I don't know what it is. I mean, other than the 4-game losing streak, but they just,
so who do you feel good about?
In the West?
Yeah.
No one.
There's
can we just tell me?
That's the most honest answer of the night. I love it.
Can the Eastern Conference top two teams, the Eastern Conference Finals, just be the NBA championship, please? Like, wouldn't you agree? Like,
I think you have to. Like,
here's my question. Maybe you're going to ask the same question.
Okay.
What team in the West do you take over any? I think we did this exercise a little bit already.
We did.
Was this where you were going? Like,
kind of.
At this point, Mike, like, let's just go through the Eastern Conference teams. Would you take any Western Conference team over Milwaukee? The answer is no.
No.
Would you take any Western Conference team over Boston right now?
No.
No. Would you take any Western Conference team over Philadelphia right now?
No.
No. Would you take any Western Conference team over the Cavs right now?
No.
That's what I like to hear. Would you take any Western Conference team over the Knickerbockers?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other teams in the East that you would choose?
No.
No.
Okay. All right, let's do this, though. Let's do this. This is where I was headed, which is sort of the reverse psychology of what you were just doing. So in the West, let's just go through and why don't we like these teams? Denver, we don't like them because of their defense, and we don't like them because we're not sure exactly what Jokic compared to the Giannis Embiid Tatum. He's a different sort of player. He's got a proven track record in the playoffs. He's been great, but there's still questions out there. And now the fact that they've lost 4 in a row and Murray's had some knee problems and hasn't been playing that well lately, there's question marks. Memphis, the Ja situation, right?
Yeah.
The Kings probably have the least.
Well, how have we not talked at all about the Kings, Mike?
Yeah, I don't know. So let's talk Kings for a second.
Okay, Mike. That's who I feel good about in the West.
Okay, so the Kings.
I'm putting my foot in the ground now.
So here's why you feel good about the Kings, right? Because the Kings are who they are, and that's who they've been throughout this entire season. So they're whatever, the number one or number two offense in the league. And they're
number one. They were number one as of the Simmons pod on Sunday. So
okay, so they're average to maybe slightly below average defensively. But they don't have any current issues that are sort of rising up. They're not injured. They don't have any chemistry issues. They don't have people suspended. They've just kind of continued to plug along. And my guess is
that... Does Mike Brown's playoff experience count as an issue?
I think Mike Brown has probably grown as a coach since he was here in Cleveland. So working with Golden State for all those years. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean. And with the Lakers. Look, I think he's a better coach now than he was. I think he's learned. So... Look, Memphis has won 3 in a row, but I still think that if Ja doesn't come back, I think Sacramento passes them and finishes up in the 2 seed. So I think Sacramento, you can feel good about them, but why don't you feel good about them? Because they're Sacramento and because they have no playoff experience and because they're not very good defensively. And history would tell you that if you're going to be an NBA champion, you have to have a better than average defense. Now they have a historically great offense, but they have a historically great offense in a season where there's been sort of an anomaly in terms of offensive basketball. So Sacramento is the one team that you can say, I don't have a big question about them based on who their team is this year, but just the history of the Sacramento Kings and the fact that this team doesn't have any playoff experience makes you question exactly what they are. Phoenix, Durant's going to not play in the regular season, or he's going to play like four games with the Phoenix Suns, and then they're suddenly going to go on a run to a title. I'm not buying that. Golden State is 7-26 on the road. The Clippers, who knows if their guys are going to play. The Russell Westbrook thing, there's a million questions about the Clippers. Sure, at their apex, maybe, but those guys have been in LA for 4 years. There is no apex. Minnesota, no Towns, the whole Gobert situation. Oklahoma City, are they even trying to win? Dallas, this whole thing with Kyrie and Luka has been, I mean, it's a disaster. I think they're 3-9 since they got Kyrie. Whatever, the Lakers. The new iteration of the Lakers. So they're going to have played together by the time the playoff rolls around. They're going to have played 20 games together. And who knows if LeBron's even going to be healthy. And then forget about those teams at the bottom. We already talked about them. So there's nobody to feel good about. Sacramento, like I said, is the only team that of this current version of their team, you can feel good about it. But they still don't defend and they're still the Sacramento Kings. So
they're going to go from being a team that hasn't been in the playoffs in the longest in sports history to the 2 seed.
It's crazy. And I think, honestly, you could look at this and say, I mean, I could see that. I could see the finals this year being a 4-0 sweep.
Okay, Mike,
depending
I want
who,
you to
depending on who gets
want,
there.
I'm going to look up before next where I'll see. What are the odds? Let's see. Can I figure this out for us on the podcast? What are the odds? Future odds? Sacramento Cleveland as a NBA Finals.
What are the odds? Do you have it pulled up? You're asking
guess. I'm gonna work on it here. Let's see if I can see if I can figure this out. NBA.
I'll say 200-1.
I don't know if I can do it on here. I was hoping I could do it on here, but I don't see it. I only have one. All sports, NBA.
I got 200-1.
Futures, here we go. Hold on. 200-1. We could go Cleveland Cavaliers. The Lakers have better odds than the Cavaliers.
Well, a lot of people are putting money on the Lakers. A lot more people than are putting money on the Cavs, let's put it that way.
Okay. So the Lakers, you can't pick them as... Oh, wait, hold conference winners. Hold on. Conference winners. Here we go. Sorry. I was not. Cavaliers are plus 1,400 to win the Eastern Conference. Oh, my God. The Sacramento Kings. I want you to guess, according to... This is not a sponsor of the podcast, but DraftKings. You can reach out to us on DraftKings. I want you to name the... There are 7 teams that have better title odds in the West than the Sacramento Kings on DraftKings right now.
Denver.
Okay.
Memphis.
Okay.
Phoenix.
Okay.
Warriors.
Yep.
Clippers.
Okay.
And I need 2 more.
2 more.
Lakers.
Okay.
Mavericks.
Wow, look at you.
Well, come on. I mean, it's not going to be Minnesota or Oklahoma City, so.
So if I bet 25 cents on the Cavs and the Kings to make the finals, I'd win $97, Mike.
There you go. Get on that.
What do you think? That's just crazy.
Be a fun finals, but it's not going to happen. But it'd be a fun finals.
It would be a fun finals. It would.
So
those two teams would be entertaining. Best defense in the league against the best offense, right?
Yeah. All right. That's your betting Sunkle betting special of the week.
See, you're gonna be getting more and more. You're gonna be sharing more and more of your betting knowledge as you get more into it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, in another year, you're gonna be like, I had 1,000 on Mobley to have seven blocks and Donovan Mitchell to have 2 assists and Garland's got to have 14 rebounds.
My friend at work has given me this. Not a friend at work. A coaching friend has given me a new lease on life, and it is you go for a 15 pick parlay, and you put 25 cents on it, and if it hits, you do really well, and if it doesn't, and you're like, oh, that was only a quarter. I could have gotten a gumball for that.
Okay, well, hey, it all starts somewhere, baby.
Yeah. Anyways. That's it. That's the new segment, the Jason Sunkle bet of the week.
That's it. I like it. Let's come up with that. Let's get that going. I hope you didn't bet on the Celtics against the Houston Rockets. Let's put it that way.
No. I did not. Did not pick the Celtics against the Houston Rockets. There you go.
Celtics are falling. Maybe they're gonna. Celtics might fall to third, Ben. They might fall to third. Philly might pass them up because Boston is struggling. They are struggling, which is good to see. I'm happy to see the Celtics struggle.
I mean,
no offense to you Celtics fans out there.
I mean, would it be the worst thing for us if they fell? I would rather play the Celtics and the Sixers personally. Right?
Well, you're still gonna get the Bucks because they're probably gonna they're gonna be 2-3 what.
So it's probably not gonna matter.
It's not gonna matter.
That's right. I guess
it would matter home court. It would matter home court. I'm not afraid really of either of those teams, to be honest with you, in the playoffs. I'd be okay with playing the Celtics or I'd be okay with playing the Sixers. I'm not saying we'd win, but I would not be afraid to play either of those teams. I would least like to see Milwaukee out of the top three.
Okay. I agree.
I just don't think we have an answer for Embiid or for Giannis. We probably don't have an answer for Embiid either, but who knows? He might have the stomach flu or something else, so he might miss a couple games. All right. I think we hit on just about everything. There's not a whole lot else for us to touch on. We touched on the MVP. We touched on the East, the West, the Cavs. So we have run the gamut tonight. We appreciate you hanging out with us for this NBA episode of the Hoopheads Pod, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.